Hey, welcome to the Digital Underground podcast. I'm happy today to be talking with Bruce Schneier, who I'm always glad to talk to, although this is under not the best circumstances. We're recording this the day after the attacks at the Boston Marathon, which are not that far from where I am. And Bruce, you wrote something for The Atlantic that was posted last night, just a few hours after the attacks. And I definitely want to talk about that pretty in depth, but I wanted to get first, what was your reaction when you, I don't know how you saw it, whether you saw it on, you know, the internet or you were watching TV. What was your initial reaction when you saw what had happened in Boston?
You know, horror and disgust, you know, same reaction I have to any senseless killing, you know, and now then worry that this will be used as an instrument to drive policy. I have so many reactions because I'm so, you know, intimately involved in security and terrorism that I think so many things at once. So I'm reacting to the events, and then I'm anticipating the reactions to the events, and I'm hoping people react properly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you tend to, as you said, you're very much involved, not just in computer security, but for the last few years more in, the physical world security as well, and sort of the terrorism debates and that kind of thing. So I know that you look at this thing, these kind of incidents, maybe a little differently than some of us do. What do you think is going to be the policy, the political reaction to this?
You know, I don't know. I mean, my fear is this is going to drive more surveillance, more police powers, and less liberty. That's what I expected. I expected that the FBI has the Patriot Act 2 sitting in a drawer somewhere, just waiting for the opportunity to haul it out and pass it as an emergency measure. It'll be called mm-hmm. something else, but that's my fear. I don't know. I mean, I wrote an essay for The Atlantic telling people to refuse to be terrorized, and it's getting an enormous amount of Facebook likes and retweeting, much more than when I wrote a similar essay most of a decade ago. So maybe things are changing. I just read that President Obama said that the American people refuse to be terrorized. Now, whether that translates into we're going to say no when the police demand the right to eavesdrop or collect data or surveil or do any of the things they want to do without judicial oversight remains to be seen. It's really hard to say no to the police when you're a government official. So I don't know.
It is, yeah, and it's become very difficult for, you know, politicians to say no to some of that culture of fear as well.
And that's right. And it's because it's very hard to be soft on terror or soft on crime. I mean, just take a hypothetical. You've got two politicians. You've got someone who's now saying, oh my God, we're all going to die unless you do all of these draconian things. And then mm-hmm. there's me saying, look, relax. Terrorism almost never happens. It's not a risk worth worrying about. There'll always be exceptions. You're much safer than you were decades ago. And compare the two of us. Fast forward 10 years, if nothing happens, right, if I'm right, the other guy gets credit for it. He gets up and says, look, all of my measures make you safe.
Right.
And if I'm wrong, or if an event does happen, my career is over. So for any politician, it is good political savvy to exaggerate the threat. It's good political savvy to do something, right? The public demands something must be done. So you do something regardless of what it is. You look like you care. You look like you're responsive. You look like you're reacting. You look like you're keeping people safe. So even if it makes no sense, it's what the natural tendency of politicians is to do. That's my fear right now.
Yeah, you're right. They feel like they have to do something. Like they always need to seem like they're doing something so that they're in the conversation, they're in the public eye, they're, you know, keeping their name in the conversation, that sort of thing. But as we saw a decade ago, in the aftermath of 9/11, it's not the first reaction is not necessarily always the right one when it comes to these things.
That's right, and it's so easy to react in haste. It's so easy to quickly do something. I mean, I'm hearing talks about problems at the London Marathon. I'm sorry, at Thatcher's funeral, and there's a London Marathon coming up. And there's a little bit of magical thinking there, right? Because the terrorist, this one, picked a marathon and not a stadium or a shopping mall or a restaurant, therefore marathons are suddenly dangerous. And that's
right.
Kind of nonsense. But it's very human to focus on the specifics of the actual event rather than the broad threat.
I wanted to ask you about that, sort of that reaction, the psychology of all of this. You know, as you said, and you've said over, and other people have said over the years, terrorism is a very rare occurrence. You know, you can open whatever newspaper is in your hometown and probably find, you know, three fatalities from car accidents yesterday.
Oh, a lot more than that. Know. Remember, 4,000 people will die in the U.S. in car crashes this month and last month and next month. That's more than 9/11.
Right. And people don't think about that. You know, they get in their car and drive, you know, 100 miles every day to and from work or whatever the case is. They drive all over town with their kids, and you don't give that a second thought. But, you know, it's the rare, you know, sort of black swan events that are the ones that get people's attention and drive that kind of fear.
And terrorism is worse than that. Terrorism actually pegs the fear buttons in so many ways. It's rare. It's spectacular. It's random. It's senseless. In this case, it affected our children. It's graphic. Mm-hmm. I mean, our brains have been evolutionarily designed to overreact against this sort of threat. It's kind of amazing.
Do you think it's the randomness that is such a problem for so many people to get a handle on? Like, if there's a, you know, some sort of defined threat and they understand what the chances are of being in a car accident and they feel like they have some control over that. Like, if I'm a good driver, then there's a lower chance of me getting into an accident and being hurt or killed. But you have no control over, you know.
That loss of control makes it more fearful. You're right. People think they have control behind the wheel, and therefore they feel safer. Right? They're more afraid to fly because they don't have control, even though the pilot is more well-trained than they are in cars. I mean, you know, completely backwards. But it's that perceived out of my control, so random, immediate, that pegs our fear buttons. And it doesn't mean that we go over the top scared. It means that our fear is out of proportion to the actual risk. Right? These are all tendencies we have to overestimate the threat. Other cases we underestimate. Right? We underestimate the threat of car crashes. We underestimate the threat of domestic violence. We underestimate the threat of global warming. Right? Why? Because that's decades into the future. We are terrible at decades into the future. We're good at immediate. A bombing is immediate. And children were involved. We overreact to threats against our children. And as soon as children are involved, a lot of reasoning goes out the window.
You're 100% right about that. Yeah, that's as soon as – I think that – I was okay, honestly, like watching all this, you know, the coverage yesterday and all that kind of stuff until the first news came across that there was an 8-year-old child, and, you know, who had been killed. And that just sort of, you know – whatever it is, that just kind of sharpened my focus on this and just sort of like made it magnified it for me.
And the thing to remember is these are entirely natural reactions. I mean, we should be upset about death of our children, attacks against our children.
Sure.
You know, I'm not trying to belittle the threat or minimize the horror. And I just don't want to make policy based on it. So, you know, we need to be angry. We need to empathize with the victims. We need to catch the people who did this and arrest them and make sure they pay. But we don't have to be scared. We don't have to live in fear. We can be indomitable. We can know that our society is better than this, that we are stronger than the terrorists are, that we don't have to change our society because they want us to. Right? We don't have to let them win. I mean, terrorism really is defined less by the attacks and more by our reaction to them.
Right.
If we react out of fear, then they win. If we don't, if we refuse to be terrorized, then they lose even though their bombs went off.
Yeah, I always sort of think of it as, you know, obviously a physical attack, but also, you know, a psychological one, an attack on the mind or on, you know, on a target's mindset. You're trying to upset the way that they think, you know, upset their daily routines, and, you know, have them live in this state of fear for as long as you possibly can.
Right. And to change policy.
Yes, for
I
sure.
I mean, in some ways, the 9/11 attacks were more successful than Osama ever dreamed of. Right? I mean, you know, maybe he guessed that all four planes would hit. It's possible he knew the Twin Towers would fall down, although I think he didn't. But I don't think he could have imagined the amount of money we would have spent, that we would have invaded Afghanistan and then Iraq, that we could have lost so many liberties in the United States. I mean, the effects of those attacks were enormous, and they were all based on our reaction to them. They were all based on fear. And he made the Twin Towers drop. Everything else we did to ourselves.
It's true. And maybe it's wildly optimistic of me, but I feel like the 12 years since those attacks, or almost 12 years, you know, a lot of things have changed, you know, both for the worst and the better in U.S. society. But I feel like we have, or at least there's a segment of our society that now looks at any kind of overreaction to these kind of events very skeptically, you know, at least more than there was, you know, 12 years ago.
I think that's true. I think my writings are getting more resonance today than they were 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And more people are skeptical. The question is this enough? The question is, can it act as a bulwark against the tide of please make us safe, do anything? But I think you're right, and I'm cautiously optimistic. But then on the other hand, maybe I'm uncautiously realistic. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. We really have to wait and see.
You've spent quite a bit of time talking about, you know, terrorism and security, you know, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. How do you feel like other societies who maybe deal with terrorism on a more regular basis than we do, how do they react to things compared to the way that, you know, Americans tend to react to this stuff?
The two good examples are Northern Ireland during the Troubles and Israel right now. And in both cases, you know, people keep calm and carry on. People do react with indomitability. They know that being fearful doesn't help. They know that to the extent they are fearful, they're giving into the terrorists. And I think they have learned to do better, but that's because things were common. A really great example is Norway, that after their absolutely horrific terrorist attack at that camp,
mm-hmm.
They made statements that they would steadfastly not change their laws, that they would not give in to terror, that they would not be fearful. I mean, I remember reading the statement, and it was just heartwarming. And here it is a couple years later, and they've kept those promises. So it can be done. You know, these are smaller countries. These are more homogeneous peoples. So maybe it's different. I'm not a sociologist, so I don't even know how to speculate here. But it's possible. You know, and I think it takes leaders. I think we respond to our leaders. And if our leaders tell us, rightfully, that the things that make America great are not worth sacrificing for a little temporary safety, we will believe it. If we're told the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, we'll rise to that occasion.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And hopefully we're going to see some. I mean, we're already, as you said, seeing some of that from Washington. Hopefully there will be more. But, you know, it is a little worrying to think of the overreaction that could come in terms of policy and, as you said, surveillance, which, you know, we've already gone pretty far down that rabbit hole here in the last 10 years. I don't know what the next steps might be, but, you know, if you think about an event like a marathon where there's, you know, roughly 30,000 runners, there's, you know, say times two or times three spectators all along the course, you know, there's cops, EMTs, there's no way to secure that environment in a realistic way. You know, the Boston police do a great job as well as they can, but I've run that race three times and you can just go on and off the course. There's plenty of opportunities for all kinds of mayhem there. You know, and any sort of overreaction to this event would, I think, be, you know, a huge mistake.
Of course. And honestly, there are hundreds of thousands of events just like that around the country, that there are huge numbers of people crowded in. But of course.
Yeah. it's just this, you know, it's one of those iconic sort of symbolic targets that somebody...
Yeah, but it's not. Honestly, a week ago, if you had made a list of iconic symbolic targets, it wouldn't have been on it. I mean, it's on it now because it happened. In the Oklahoma City Federal Building. How's that for a non-iconic, non-symbol target? Yet, when it happened, we were just as horrified. Yeah, you know, don't think of it in terms of targets. You know, because we're a big, free country, there are lots of places where large groups of people amass in small volumes. That's the way we work. And we like it that way. We kind of like crowds.
Yeah, that's right. We like events, and we do events well, and we like, you know, celebrations and all of that kind of stuff. Hopefully, as you said, Bruce, this won't cause people to boomerang and go the other way, but I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see what the reaction is.
We will.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Bruce.
Hey, thank you.
It's great to talk to you, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Take care.